is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. A Rome of one's own, the forgotten women of the Roman Empire. I welcome Emma Sullivan, the author of an extremely witty and careful explication of what I've never read, the Roman Empire, the Roman Republic, the Roman monarchy, from the point of view of the women who lived and died in it. This book presents a completely new version of everything you've assumed about where did Julius Caesar come from, or what was the decline and fall of the Roman Empire, or why did it divide into Constantinople and allow Rome to attenuate so that there were less than 10,000 people there at one point around 1,000 years ago. Emma, congratulations and a very good evening to you. We begin in the monarchy, the kingdom, somewhere in the mid-8th century BCE, ending somewhere in the 6th century BCE. As told by the historian Livy, chiefly, there are other voices, but Livy is a major driver here. When did Livy write this, and who was the audience Livy had in mind? Good evening to you, Emma.
Good evening. Thank you so much for having me. Livy is writing a very long time after the period that he's writing about. He's writing in the first century CE. So he's writing in the reign of the first emperor, Augustus. And he is writing for an audience of people who are being forced to come to terms with, the return to monarchy, essentially, to the having one man who is in charge of everything, and who is reshaping the Roman Empire around himself. And Livy is part of a large cultural project, essentially, to write Roman history so that it leads to Augustus and so that it explains Augustus's prominence and his reign. The other big writer from that period is Virgil and his Aeneid, which tells a very similar story, and Dionysus of Halicarnassus, who is also writing at the same time. And they are all writing in the same 50-year period for the same audience of people who are having to relearn their history because it now needs to explain Augustus's rise and the new republic as they were coming to see it, which we now know as the empire.
What we would call in America, Roman exceptionalism. We're the victors. And they're writing for Augustus, whom you now and again, also known as Octavian, you now and again emphasize was very keen on how people remembered him, how he presented himself at the time and how he was remembered. So Livy means to flatter. Dionysius Halicarnassus means to flatter. They all mean to flatter the emperor.
They do all mean to flatter him. They all mean to help his project, and they all mean to explain why Rome has got to this point where it is so incredibly powerful and where it has defeated pretty much everybody. Now that Egypt, they're written just after the defeat of Antony and Cleopatra and the absorption of Egypt into the empire, and that is really takes Roman power to an enormous extent. And so the other part of this project is to explain that Rome is the most virtuous and the most beloved by the gods of all the people who have ever lived on the earth.
So now that we've characterized what you're about to hear, remember, this has a purpose. It's not just once upon a time. Hercilia, married to Romulus, who is a real person to Livy and a real person to Augustus. Romulus founds Rome. And 4 years later, he wants the Roman success to grow, but they need women because they're just a bunch of men standing around yelling at each other. And now we introduce the Sabines. Who were they and who were the Sabine women?
So the Sabines are people who are from the area of kind of Tuscany. So they're from around other areas in Italy. They're Etruscan, and they are another peoples who exist in the same world that early Rome does. So Rome is founded as a city-state within a lot of other Etruscan city-states in Italy. And initially, Romulus tried to get women by sending out envoys and asking all of these city-states around Rome for permission to marry their daughters. But he had largely populated his city by offering sanctuary and asylum to people like enslaved people who had run away from enslavement, or criminals who were running away from prosecution in their hometown, and people, anybody who wanted to come would receive asylum there. And unsurprisingly, the Sabine people and others did not want to marry their daughters off to these new Romans. So he developed instead a plan to forcibly take himself some women, and he and his men put on a new religious festival. They claimed to have found a lost altar, and they put on a new religious festival in honor of this god that they had found, and invited people, prominent people from nearby towns, including the Sabines, to come and celebrate this new festival with them, which they did, and hundreds came. And in the middle of the games that they held in celebration, because religious Roman religious observation very often involved games and races and performances, they gave a signal, stood up, and took the women, the young women, the daughters of the Sabines, took them at knife point and carried them back to their houses as their wives.
Pulling their hair, yes, of course.
Yes, and in imagery, you see them when they've described this. They've got women under their arms, they've got women over their shoulders. There's very much a forcible taking of women.
Did Hersilia approve of this?
Hersilia, there are two versions of Hersilia. In one, she is a young woman who is taken. She's one of the women who is kidnapped. And in another version, she is an older woman who is the mother of one of the Sabine women, who stays with her daughter. So all of the men run away, and she is the one who stays. But in all versions, she is one of the women who is held captive. So she is not one who approves, but one who is forcibly held in Rome.
I remember now, Augustus believed this. Time passes, and the Sabines men finally gather their courage to come back and rescue their wives and daughters. And yep. They meet in a contest below the Palatine Hill, and the battle goes on until at the final moment, before everybody's going to slaughter everybody else, the women come back. And what do they want?
They come running down the hill. This is the final battle. The Sabines have actually defeated the Romans and managed to get inside the city walls, which is a big kind of humiliation for the Romans. But as they're about to start the final battle in the center of Rome, the women all come running down the hill, led by Hersilia. It's been long enough that these women have managed to conceive and sometimes have children. And Hersilia gives a long speech in which she implores both sides to put down their weapons, because they have turned this war by marrying these women, by having children with them. They have turned this war not into a war between enemy forces, but a war between families, because the women stand between the Sabine fathers and the Roman sons-in-laws. And now these women have the grandchildren of the Sabine men, and who are the children of the Roman men. And the broader point that is being made is that women hold men together, and that marriage and family are something that that hold men in concord with one another, and that they owe each other obligations to not harm one another once they have become son-in-law and father-in-law, father and son, brother-in-law, and that the women are the glue who hold men together and stop them from fighting.
Emma makes the point that the Sabines had defeated the Romans before this final battle. The reason is because a woman named Tarpeia, a young woman, opened the gates in exchange for what she thought would be gold ringlets, but it was not the Sabines fooled her. And so what we have here is Tarpeia betraying Rome and Hercilia saving Rome by saying, by the way, you're all relatives. So if you're going to kill each other, kill us first because you'll make us widows and orphans. So the two women, Tarpeia, the betrayer, and Hercilia, the wise voice, they are the foundation for Rome, right there.
They are. And in that you also get a thing that you will find in a lot of Roman literature and a lot of Roman versions of their own history, and then a lot of Western literature, which is the bad woman who is saved by the good woman. The sins of the bad woman, in that Tarpeia opens the gate because she is enticed by luxury, which is a thing that the Romans thought was a profoundly female thing, is redeemed by the woman who puts her family first.
We need to pursue this good and bad woman story. I'm with Emma Southern. A Rome of One's Own is the book, The Forgotten Women of the Roman Empire. This is the Roman Empire from the woman's point of view as much as possible. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.